Part 8. And now, Crossing the Earth with Mark Whittaker.
I talk to the trees, but they don't listen to me. Now, is that because trees don't have ears, or is it that I'm not sufficiently fluent in Scots pine or horse chestnut? Are they just plain rude? Or would you have to be a few pine cones short of a plantation to even contemplate a meaningful dialogue with a Douglas fir? Well, lots of people, even the odd prince, have been known to talk to the trees. Others hug them. And only this week, a funeral service was held in Herefordshire for some trees the council had chopped down. But it's not just the trees. Rocks get in on the act too. Communing with nature is, in some circles at least, being taken well beyond the nth degree. It's now possible to have a spiritual relationship with the entirely inanimate. In the Outer Hebrides, there are plans for Europe's biggest quarry, to move a mountain and drill a huge hole in Harris, an open wound in Mother Earth. But besides the usual earthy arguments about money versus mess, there are, it seems, others of a more what-on-earthy nature. We're talking spirituality here. Rock become flesh, flesh become spirit. Amen. Quarrying with conscience. Reverence for rocks.
I can see quarrying going ahead within the context of reverence when that quarrying can be undertaken with love. In other words, when nature is being treated as respectfully as possible and the uses to which the rock is being put are to satisfy the needs of the poor, to tender to the needs of social justice. But that's not what's happening here. This mountain's being knocked down primarily to make motorways so that the rich don't have to travel by public transport. They can go around in even bigger, faster cars and all the rest of it, make even more pollution for the rest of us. That's the very opposite of social justice, and it's not ecological justice either.
So is this a new
Welsh? Does that feel different to describing them in English?
This is one of the great differences between Wales and England, that nearly all our place names have remained Welsh. When you talk about Mynydd, which is the Welsh for mountain, you really got a slightly different picture, I think, before you. Mynydd is much closer to the Welsh heart than mountain would be. I'm rather maverick. I just have no interest, I have no hope in a Wales that gradually became anglicized, so the language died out, people more and more began to refer to mountain rather than Mynydd. To me, the Welsh entity would have ceased to exist. It was just part of England. And I really wonder, can you put out an enthusiasm for fighting for a preservation or something like that? I've got a long poem called of Aspon, because it sums up to me what you really mean by Wales. It's this country of waterfalls. You know, I refer in the poem, if you take the train at night or if you come by car at night and stop the engine or get out of the train onto a platform, if you hear water falling, you sort of know you're in Wales. That is the entity which I want to preserve. The traveller gets down onto a midnight platform and knows from the rustle of unseen waterfalls he has come home. Once our literature was on the continent's lips, we exchanged delegates with its princes in a world oscillating between dollar and yen. Our liquidities are immaterial.
The poet R.S. Thomas lamenting the lost days of a Celtic Europe. Well, I'm joined now by Alistair McIntosh, who's postgraduate teaching director at the Centre for Human Ecology at Edinburgh University. Alistair, as a Celt yourself, do you have a hankering after those far-off days of tree pollen pen, of those sacred springs and mystic mountains?
Well, you know, these are not far-off days. These are the ways in which people who are deeply rooted to their place in the Celtic lands of the world of Europe live now. Not everybody by any means, but many of them. People like Canon McQueen of Barra, who says, for example, that his hobby is beachcombing. He does his thinking by the water's edge, preparing his sermons, sitting by the sea, watching it eddying round his feet. He says, that's God literally there, the sense and presence of God. I'm living my faith in the environment. These aren't far-off days. These are things that are with us now.
A lot of people talk about getting close to nature, but isn't there a danger that really what people are doing is they're imbuing aspects of nature with something that's almost anthropomorphic? I mean, the idea that trees have a personality, that trees can scream and that can be talked to.
There may be a danger in that, but I think a greater danger is the prevailing view that we are not part of nature, that we are somehow separate from nature. And I think that when you open your heart up to nature, when you receive the beauty of nature into you, it speaks of a power which says to us, we are part of this. If we destroy this, we are cutting off one of our own limbs.
Do trees scream as far as you're concerned?
A lot of the problem here is that we're talking poetic language. We're talking metaphor. We're not talking factual scientific language. And so when people talk about trees screaming or rocks hurting, they're talking about that in a way that is intuited by, you might say, spiritual perception rather than rationalistic perception.
Aren't they really saying it's me that hurts, not the rock or the tree?
But that's fair enough, because we are of this planet. We are integral to this planet. If a forest is destroyed, I do hurt, personally. And I think a lot of the problem in our world is that people have become desensitized to that hurt. And that's why they're so rapidly destroying the environment around them.
But you don't think that, like a lot of religion sometimes, that it's really self-indulgent, that people are more preoccupied with the self, really, that they talk about my commune with nature, but they're not really bothered about what happens to nature. They're more bothered about their internal self and how good the feel-good factor, if you like.
I think that may be true of some people, the kind of weekend environmentalists. But the kind of people who are on the M77 motorway protest site at Pollock in Glasgow, one of my friends got stabbed there last week, defending nature. The kind of people who are putting their lives, putting their jobs on the line, they're not doing it for a feel-good factor. They're doing it for the sake of us all, for our common heritage. They're doing it to defend this planet and to ensure that for the next 6 billion years, possibly, until the sun goes into supernova, there is a worthwhile place for human beings or our evolved successors to live on.
What exactly happened on the Pollock estate, then?
Well, what's happening there is that the powers that be are trying to build the M77 motorway through a park, knocking down 1,000 trees, side by side with an area of so-called priority treatment where 41,000 people live, with one of the lowest car ownerships in Britain, one of the poorest communities in Britain. People from that community and from elsewhere, but especially people from that community, are now camping out in the trees in what they call the Pollock Free State, and are trying to defend that place from being destroyed. Now, obviously, in that kind of area, you get a lot of gang interest. Gangs are concerned with territory. The motorway is about violation of territory. And so what's happening just now is very interesting, because probably for the first time in Britain, we're seeing an ecological action in not just a working class area of Britain, but very much an underside, a marginalized part of society. So the gang leaders are getting involved in this process. The organizers of the protest are saying to them, look, this is your territory. Stop fighting amongst yourselves. Stop fighting us. Put your back behind stopping this motorway, violating this territory, destroying these trees. However, it's dashed hard for them. And one of them, Colin McLeod, a week ago, got stabbed 3 times when one of the gang leaders felt he wanted to prove something. But the following week, when I was out there in the middle of the night, when there were 3 fights involving gang leaders during the night, Colin McLeod turned to me and he said, you know, this is a redemption center. And that was the most profound theological statement I had heard all day. A day at which I'd been at a meeting chaired by a bishop with various priests and nuns present and so on, because he was right. Redemption of violence, the changing, the transformation of violence was going on there, both within society in terms of the powers that give us this motorway and within the people being affected by it, who were being forced to wake up to the real source of the violation, which is the cause of violence within them.
Well, that certainly doesn't sound like weekend environmentalists.
It certainly isn't. And, you know, it's just amazing what goes on in that kind of context. You're in a situation, I mean, 2 o'clock in the morning, the leader of the local Hells Angels turns up wanting to have a fight. And it ends up not with a fight, but with him being hugged and people crying. That is wonderful stuff that is going on. The media may dub these people hippies and dropouts. These people are actually at the front end of reconstituting our society, of regenerating community, of saving the environment so our children's children's children have got something worth having.
Thank you, Alistair McIntosh. That's it for this week. Next week, Jailhouse Rock Plant. How green fingers are transforming the Nick and terraforming to green up the red planet. A new Eden on Mars. Other worlds explored next week on Costing the Earth.
In Glasgow, the M77 protesters are angry that the cut through natural woodland. They've been camping out since March on the site which they've declared independent from the rest of the UK, when these beats Owen Thomas spent last night in Pollock Free State.
Well, it's coming up to about midnight. It's freezing cold. It's raining. There's about 10 of us sitting around a fire. Now, these guys have been here since March, doing a 24-hour shift in what they call the Pollock Free State. One of the protesters is Jimmy. The road plans, Jimmy, are being almost set in stone. It's going ahead. Isn't this sort of demonstration just futile, a waste of time?
No, I don't think so. This demonstration is futile when we know the support we get from the local people. It's gone through one of the biggest green belt areas in the whole of Europe. The people in this area don't have any facilities. They don't have cars. They don't have jobs. This is the only environment they've got. It's the only decent place they can walk through it and have a bit of fresh air.
Well, Neil, you're another one of the protesters sitting here in the rain, in the cold. There are some people who say that roads bring jobs, it'll bring prosperity, it'll bring new factories and that sort of thing to brighten up this depressed area.
Well, that's complete nonsense. And even if it did, it's a hell of an expensive way to do it.
Over the past year or so, we've seen other demonstrations, the M11, the M65. They've often turned ugly. They've all been confrontation at the end of it, running battles with police, if you like. Is this the sort of thing that we might see here? Is this what you're prepared to face?
Well, obviously we're prepared to face it. This setup down here, if you're here, you're prepared to use non-violent direct action to defend it.
There's already been some trouble at the camp and rumours some extremists have set man traps along the proposed route. But they're wasting their time, according to Councillor Charlie Gordon, the chair of the Highways Committee, the driving force to get the road built.
The regional council has already decided on this matter. The contract has been let. I don't see any way that the scheme can be prevented. And it seems to me that most sensible people realise that lorries and vans cannot travel by public transport and therefore need to travel on the road, and the bus has to travel on the road, and therefore an integrated transportation policy involves public transport and some limited road building.
The campaign to stop the M77 stepped up a gear tonight with Galliano and Herman X putting on a gig to raise money for the protesters. The manager of Herman X is Ian Copeland.
The band do tend to have their own viewpoint on the way the world is run, so obviously their music will reflect their own views, you know, the whatever politics that they may have. There is a danger of bands getting involved in campaigns purely for exposure, but I do think that the bands are particularly interested in the issues that are affecting this particular campaign.
And just in case you are thinking about going along, that gig in Glasgow tonight is a sellout.
All you need to know, all you want to hear.
Backstreet Traders are cashing in on a...
Till then, may the spirits go with you. Good night.